music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
The world is still in shock that the legendary recording artist Prince passed away unexpectedly at his Paisley Park studios on April 21st. We're fortunate that award-winning choreographer Tina Landon joins us to talk about what life was like behind the scenes working for this one-of-a-kind entertainer. Up next is Colleen Renison, lead singer of Vancouver-based rock band No Sinner, chatting about their new album, Old Habits Die Hard, and releasing their lead single, All Woman. It's always an honor to have this lady join us on the Kelly Alexander Show. Tina Landon is a dancer and award-winning choreographer who's basically worked with everyone, from Rihanna, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Aerosmith, Michael Jackson, of course, her long-standing relationship with Janet Jackson, and the legendary Prince. We've actually invited Tina onto the show today to talk about her time with Prince, as unfortunately, he has just passed away at the age of 57, and the world is in shock. Tina, thank you for joining us on the show today.
It is my pleasure and honor. Thank you.
So, first of all, I have to ask this. It always seems to be the first question when somebody important passes away. Where were you and how did you find out about the fact that Prince had passed?
No. Okay, so I'll try and say this without crying. Literally, just a few hours ago, I was on a hike with one of my acting buddies. And very proud that I got up early in the morning and we were hiking in Reseda. And when we got in the car, we were about to go eat. I said, wait a minute, my phone's blowing up. Let me make sure my husband doesn't need me because he's working on a job right now. And I looked at my phone and I'm like, what is this? What's going on? And usually I dismiss right away, like, oh, this is such a crap. But there were so many text messages and so many missed calls from my husband. I'm like, what's going on? And then when he told me, I just was so numb. I still couldn't believe it. And then, of course, shortly after, just completely lost it in the car.
And when you speak about those messages, was it sort of like an outpouring of love and just messages from, like, your colleagues in the business? Because I'm assuming the dance community and the music community, obviously, we all know they're devastated. But was it, like, fellow choreographers and dancers that were sort of sending you messages?
No, it was actually my very closest friends, my assistant, my neighbors, because we were just talking about him literally this Sunday. We have a family dinner that we do with my neighbors every Sunday. And we were talking about him. We're like, and everyone was joking at the table, well, if you want to know anything, just ask. About Prince, just ask Tina. I was like, yeah, what do you guys want to know? Because I love him. I still love him. I'll always love him. And he's just been one of my favorites. And so that's where the first calls were coming in. Basically people that were the closest to me. And then when I clicked on the Facebook, it was just all my other friends that apparently I just didn't realize how boisterous I was or how much love, I guess, I showed for Prince, that people all over the world that I haven't seen in years were just reaching out to me, sending me love, thinking of you today. And I'm going, oh my God, I didn't even know they knew how much I loved him. And these are people I haven't spoken to in years. So yeah, so it started first with the inner circle and then it spread out. And my phone, like I said, has been blowing up with just so much an outpouring of love and prayers and kind of comfort, you know.
Can you tell us how you actually first met Prince and got to work with him?
Well, I had been a longtime fan. I mean, I had all his records, I had all his albums, I went to the Purple Rain concert, like, before I ever thought in the million years that I would work with him. And it just so happened, Sean Cheeseman and I had just met in the dance world, and we started hanging out, and we were kind of, you know, the right and left of each other, we realized, in choreography. And he had the opportunity to work with Prince. And before I could say anything, he asked me if I wanted to assist him. I almost ripped through the phone to, like, give him a nice sloppy one. Like, yes, I'll do it for free. I just want to be in the same room with him.
And what was it like when you walked in? And tell us what video it was. And when you walked in, what was it like?
It was for the video Cream, and which was, I believe, on the Diamonds and Pearls album. And so Sean had cast all the dancers, and the funny thing was, you know, like we often do as choreographers, we play the artist ourselves, or we get one of the dancers to be the artist. So since we had you know, we had Diamond and Pearl, which was Lori and Rabia, the two dancers, and that flanked him. And I was short and little, and I was the assistant. I got to be prince, which was really awesome for, you know, creating. But when the closer the time came that he was going to show up for rehearsal, I started to freak out, going, oh, my God, he's going to be watching me being him to see if he likes what I'm doing being him. Oh, my God, Prince is going to be watching me. Like, I've been dancing and choreographing forever, and that thought never registered. And so when he walked in the room, I mean, I literally have never been starstruck, and I still to this day have never been starstruck with the people that I work with, and I've worked with some amazing people except for Prince. And he walked in the room, and I kind of just stood there, and Sean, who was very generous, said, this is Tina. He introduced us, and he said, now she's going to be showing you what you're going to do. And apparently, I just went on a run-on sentence that lasted for God knows how long, babbling and tripping over myself. And I just remember seeing Sean Cheeseman's face looking bewildered, like, what is wrong with you? And Prince was kind of looking at me. And so anyway, we do the thing. And then afterwards, Sean told me, I've never seen you this nervous. Are you okay? And I was like, I'm about to lose it right now. You have no idea what this man means to me. You have no idea how much I admire him and his artistry, his everything, the way his perfectionism, the way he is with music and performance. I'm like, you don't know what this is doing to my soul right now. Like to this day, I still get butterflies thinking about that moment. And he was so cool and calm and kind of just jumped right in and, you know, and I could not have been more separated from myself because I was outside of myself watching me teach him what he was doing. And it was probably the most incredible experience I think I've ever had in this business.
We've talked before about how when you've worked with Janet and how she picks things up, how does he pick things up? Like when you were showing him the dance moves?
You know what? He was pretty right on as far as like, he's a little bit of the two of them, kind of how the way Michael would watch and then just kind of know it. Like you didn't have to, you know, do it that many times. He would kind of get the gist of it and go, okay, I got it. And then he would jump in. And if he had questions, he would just, it was very strangely enough, very laid back and casual when it came to the choreography.
Okay.
And he kind of just slithered in there and he got it and he made it his own. And then it worked.
You mentioned a little bit before about him being a perfectionist, and we, you know, we've all heard the stories with regards to his music. Did that carry obviously over to the dance world and his music videos, like how all that artistry sort of came together?
Yeah, I mean, he was just very specific and very precise about things that he wanted. And the good thing was that I was such a huge fan and had studied him and his music for so long that I almost felt like I knew him when I started to work with him. Like I would tell Sean, like, I don't think he's going to like that. I think it's going to be more like this. Like it was just, I had this like weird thing of a feel, and I could have been wrong, but I was pretty on point with most of it. Like where I thought he was going to gravitate towards a certain step or towards a certain type of movement. He wasn't as compulsive or crazy about the choreography, but he was a perfectionist as far as like getting there on time. Let's rehearse this. Let's do it. Let's knock it out. And he wasn't someone that stood around and did a lot of small talk. And there wasn't, and you kind of got that with his artistry. There wasn't time for small talk and kind of BS. Mm-hmm. It's like you go in there, you do it right, or you do it until you get it right. And then you're done and you move on. And I kind of always felt like there was this kind of snapping finger, like, we got it, let's move it, let's do it. There was no lag. He wasn't that lackadaisical performer. There was no lag time ever with Prince. When he was done, he was gone.
Wow.
Pretty much.
The door. There's so many questions to ask, but I wanted to start again, I guess, on this train of thought. When it comes to dance artists, we always... Or even just pop artists of the 80s, we always talk about the Janets, the Michaels, the Madonnas, and especially with regards to Prince, I think the first thing you think about Prince is like, you know, him and his guitar or him and his piano. But as a dancer and a choreographer and obviously as a fan, where do you view Prince in the dance community, if you will?
And I'm going to piss some people off, but I just feel like Prince is so much bigger than that. Like, I feel like I can't put him in one category. I can't put him in the view of the dance community or the view of the musicianship. He is probably one of the very few complete artists that I don't think Prince is separate from music. I don't feel that he's separate from movement either or dance. So it's all encompassed within him. Does that make any sense?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally get it. No, 100%. 100%. We are very happy to have on the show with us today, dancer and choreographer Tina Landon. Make sure to follow her on Twitter at @IamTinaLandon. If we can talk a little bit about, I know you said that not a lot of small talk was going on, but how is he as a person? Because, you know, the mystique around Prince is that, you know, he's shy and a recluse. But what was it like to sort of, you know, work with him day after day?
Well, it was nerve-wracking for me because, of course, that was the fan in me. I wanted everything to be perfect. I was so nervous all the time when he would walk in the room because he just carried this presence. And it wasn't a fearful one. It was just a feeling that I had, like, I better be on my game. This man doesn't have time to just to BS, or, you know, he's there to create, obviously, but it's like you're there to do a job. And so I was always just wrecked with nerves trying to, because you always ask more from you, I think, than, at least for me, I felt like he was always asking more than I thought I was capable. And he did it with this belief that in you that, yeah, you can do this. You can deliver this. This is what I'm asking you to do. And he would leave a room and I would just fall to the floor. Like, I have no idea what he just wanted me to do. Like, this one time I was working with Maite and he comes in. And one of the things about Prince is that sometimes he would put you on a plane and fly you and you would have no idea what you were working on because he wouldn't release the music, especially if it wasn't already out. Mm-hmm. He's not going to send you the music. You're going to get it when you get there. So for me, that was nerve-wracking because I like to work alone. I like to figure it out. I like to experiment and then get with the artist and show them what I've come up with, and then we can collaborate from there. But with Prince, you're kind of doing it on the spot. And so this one time he comes in and he's like, okay, so we want to do a little bit of Tina Turner, but some African and like a little bit of hip hop. Oh, you got that? I went, mm-hmm. He's like, okay. And then he would leave the room and I would have no idea. I'm like, I have no idea what that means or what I'm supposed to do. I don't even know the song. And so in the beginning, I think he also got to learn dancers and choreographers and how we work, because one of the first times I ever worked with him, he kind of just stayed in the room. And that used to drive me crazy. And then after a while, after a few videos had gone by and tours I'd worked with, he would tell me what he wanted. And then he would look at me and goes, okay, do you want to work alone? And I go, yes, please. When do you want me to come back? How about in 2 hours? He goes, okay. And he would leave. And I'm like, oh my God, he finally gets it. Like, he's making me crazy when he sits here and watches me because I don't know what I'm doing. Wow. So, I don't know what the original question was.
Yeah, that's fine.
Sorry.
That's good. And did you do a lot of the work, Tina, at Paisley Park?
We did. We did. In the beginning, when we did Cream, he came to L.A. and when we did the Diamonds and Pearls stuff. And then after that, we did pretty much everything at Paisley Park.
Can you describe for the fans a little bit about Paisley Park? Because it just has a mystique to it as well. Like, what do you expect when you sort of walk in there? Like, because I know when he was on Oprah, I think in like the mid-90s, he kind of talked a little bit about the place. And it just sounds like it's magical that he had like, you know, a wardrobe room. And so obviously, I'm sure he had a dance studio and all of that.
He did. It was, there were some kind of very normal parts. Like there was a little kitchenette and the little lounge and the little reception area when you come in. And then I remember going up these metal stairs to a dance room that he had. It almost felt like you were going up a fire escape, but you were still inside the building. I wasn't really in a lot of the recording areas. Those were kind of down a different hallway. Mm-hmm. But I remember he had this huge, gigantic room that we would normally rent out here at a studio when we're getting ready for a tour. And that's where he would do some of the tour rehearsals. But then when we were there working on the Bet You By Golly Wow video, we had 50 dancers. And so after the second night of shooting, he decided to tell everyone once we were done to go home and you know, relax and then come back. And he had gotten a DJ and he had brought in food. And he basically threw a dance party for all of us in that big kind of rehearsal room.
Can you talk a little bit, because, you know, you and I have talked before in the past about what it's like to work with Janet, what it's like to work with Michael. When it comes to him as, I don't even want to use the word boss, but I know you sort of said that he, you know, likes things done and all that, but were you friends with Prince?
No, I mean, I wish I was. But I kept it at a very professional, well, we both did, obviously, kept it very professional, and there just wasn't room for that type of relationship.
Okay.
He definitely treated me with respect, and it was really cool. Like, one of the times he pulled me aside, he's like, you know, I have to tell you that I love working with you because you're one of the most collaborative artists or collaborative choreographers that I've ever worked with. You don't try and push certain steps or anything. I was like, well, no, at the end of the day, this is your image and your, and he kind of just was like, okay. You know, kind of like we came to this agreement, the conversation was over, he left. But like, so he would throw like kind of little compliments and things out there. But that's about as friendly, I think, as it got. Like, he was a jokester. And he was just always very respectful. And I remember, and again, here I would get very nervous and in front of him. And one of the tours I was working with Maite, and we were taking a break. And he said... And I was trying to explain something to him. And I guess I was just very adamant about getting my point across and I was rambling. And then when I was done, he kind of looked at me. He's like, okay, can I go now? And I went, oh my God. I was like, of course, of course.
I wanted to ask you, because, you know, the Cream video, obviously that was in the early 90s. That's, I think, my favorite song from him in life. It's amazing. But when you work with him later, sort of around that 96 era, obviously you had more things under your belt yourself. What was it like coming back to him at that point? And how did you get that gig to sort of work on Bet You By Golly Wow and everything sort of surrounding that?
At that time, I don't remember. I just remember Jamie. Oh, you know what? I think he called us both. He had a very interesting way of working. You know, when I first started with Sean and we did Cream and we did the Diamonds and Pearls tour, he also, Prince at the same time was starting, he brought Carmen Electra under his belt and he was starting to bring her up. Sean and I did Carmen's first video and then all of a sudden we got introduced to Maite and then all of a sudden Prince split us up. So Sean ended up doing all the Carmen Electra stuff and I started working with Maite one-on-one. And so when the Bet You By Golly Wow video came and he kind of wanted me and Jamie to work together and we'd work together as dancers and work separately as choreographers. But then he put us together on this. We're like, okay, well, this is cool. This is how we're going to do this. Are you going to pick 25 of your friends and I'll pick 25 of mine? And we kind of decided that. And then he flew us to Minneapolis. And here we are at Paisley Park. And I remember Jamie and I started to choreograph. And Jamie looks at me like, is he going to stay here the whole time? Because he was sitting in a chair in the corner watching us. And I went, I guess. Like, we're dancing and we're talking. He goes, just go for it. And we just started dancing like crazy. We didn't even know the song that well. I mean, we knew the original. And then it was very interesting because at that point, that was really the first time that he interjected with some of his own ideas of the choreography. Mm-hmm. And he was pointing out things that he liked and things how, you know, he's like, I kind of liked when you guys did this. What if you did more of that? And he kind of threw out three or four things. And we said, okay. And then he got up and left. Wow. And we're like, what just happened here? And that was kind of the beginning of that kind of working relationship with him. Like, he was starting to understand choreography. He was starting to understand dance.
Okay.
As far as the way, you know, we work as dancers and choreographers.
What was it like, or what was your favorite piece to work on in that era? Like, was it the Betcha by Golly Wow, or was it something else?
Oh, there's so many. I would say I really liked when we did the Get Off video, and I did that with Sean Cheeseman, because I really loved the song. But then later on, it was just really interesting because, again, he was challenging me daily. Working with him was just so different than anybody else. And he really, I felt like, okay, I've got to be on my A game. I've got to be more confident. I've got to be in here and go, yes, I can do that. Yes, whatever you need, I can do it. Mm-hmm. And he would leave the room and I'd be like, I don't know what's happening, but I'm going to figure it out. And I really, for me, I was like, God, this is actually really a blessing because he is pushing me to work harder and to be better. And the funny thing is, it was years later that my best friend, Sophie, reminded me that after I left the Purple Rain tour, that was my first tour ever in life, I remember leaving the tour, standing outside, feeling so energized, and just thought, he inspired me to be the best I could be. I remember specifically saying, I want to be as good as him at whatever I do in life, because he is 1,000% on stage, and that doesn't come from just sheer luck.
Wow.
And I had forgotten I had said that, and then here it is, years later, I'm actually working with him. And it kind of clicked. I went, he's pushing me right now. And that's just how he worked.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it was so different that I felt very grateful that somebody kind of believed in me that much to kind of just keep pushing.
When it comes to, because, like, forgive me, I don't know this exact information, but did you actually go on tour with him as a dancer, or did you just set things up with Sean, like, for the Diamonds and Pearls tour? And did you do other tours with him?
I did not dance with him. I did. Wait, Sean and I did do the Get Off video.
Okay.
I mean, not the video. We did the Get Off performance. I don't remember which award show it was, but it was the one where at the end of it, Prince turned around and he was wearing the buttless cap.
Oh, you were in that? Oh my God, that's amazing. In the yellow little number that he was wearing.
Yeah, but Sean and I were hiding in a corner because at the last minute, he wanted all the girls to wear fishnet unitards, but he didn't want us to wear anything underneath.
Oh.
And we told him that wasn't going to happen. The girls, they're dancers, we're not strippers. So we all were going to put, you know, at least panties and bras underneath.
Yeah.
But I was so really kind of modest at that time.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to do this and hide behind everybody else because I don't want anyone to see me.
Oh my God.
But I wanted to get the after check.
Oh my God. That is awesome. So I think that was the MTV video or MTV Music Awards. I feel like
that is exactly what it was, because I remember now when he realized that the dancers weren't going to do that. Somebody, I don't know who it was, went out and they did get some girls from a strip club, painted them gold, and they were absolutely naked on stage.
Oh,
they were just
God.
In gold. And if you watch that performance, if you can find it, you'll see where the camera pans down. They realize, oh my God, they're naked, and they come back up. And you never see the girls in gold again. And then Prince turns around and you see his butt. And I think MTV just wanted to die at that point.
Oh my God. Because that would have been like, what, like 91 or 92? Like that was early on. I don't think they were too risque at that point.
No, they weren't. And nobody expected it. Of course, he didn't wear that in rehearsal. We didn't even see it.
Oh,
we never saw what had happened until we watched the playback.
Oh my God. I can't believe you were there, T. That's awesome. That's so crazy.
Yeah, it was really cool. Very cool.
Oh my God. When was the last time you worked with him or saw him in person?
It was a very, very, I'm so bad with numbers. You know me.
Yeah. And I keep asking anyway.
I know. I don't know. I know it was during the My K time because that's who I was working with.
Okay.
And one of the coolest, I think, memories that I'll ever have of him was we were doing it. This was when he was wearing Slave on his face.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he was, I never called him anything anyway. I just waited till he looked at me and I'd walk over and say, yes. Like, did you call? Because I would never call him Prince or whatever that other symbol thing was. But at this point, he was wearing Slave. That was when he was having problems with Warner Brothers and EMI and wanting to own his masters. And we were working on a song, and God forgive me, I cannot remember the name of the song, but he wanted the whole thing to be like a musical, and it was going to be, the band was going to be, the New Power Generation, they were going to be in it, with plus a bunch of extras, and it was going to be, you know, him and my tape basically were starring in this thing. And so we were setting it up in rehearsal, it was just me, myself, Prince and Maite, and we were going, okay, the court's going to do this, then the jury will stand up here, and then the blah, blah, blah will sing there. And he's like, can I talk to you? And I went, oh, God. So he pulls me outside the room. He goes, why don't you just direct this? Wow. And I about peed on myself. I went, oh, my God. I was like, thank you so much for believing in me, but I've never directed. He's like, so? That doesn't mean you can't. I think you can do this. And I said, I really, really appreciate how much, you know, this opportunity. And he just cut me off. He's like, just think about it. And he walked away, as he does. And he's like, you know where you want everything. You're choreographing. You're setting this up. You know where the camera should go. So just think about it. And I actually got a production company. I went, and I was like, if he thinks I can do it, I can do it. I wrote a treatment. He signed off on it, and we were getting ready to go. And that's when whatever happened between EMI and Warner's, the video just went away, and we didn't end up doing it.
Wow.
But I'd never had an artist approach me saying, why don't you just direct my video? And
wow.
It wasn't just any artist.
Nope. That is awesome. You're such a rock star. That's amazing. That's so cool. Now, for the Janet fans that are listening, and we know they are, and I appreciate it so much. Obviously, Janet had such a staying situation or a presence in Minneapolis, if you will, obviously, because of the album she recorded there. Did he ever talk about Janet or Michael or other artists? Like, because I'm sure, like Michael, he was aware of who was coming up behind him. And just for artistic sake, just to sort of see like, oh, this one's doing this one, that one's doing that one. Did he ever have comments about anyone else?
You know what he did do? And I could kick myself now because, you know, I was just very naive and very young-minded, and I just wanted to dance and choreograph. I didn't know about anything, right? And this was in between the Janet and the Velvet Rope tour, because I was there working with, I think this was right around the time that he asked me to direct that video. And I was actually in Minneapolis with Janet, and she was recording Velvet Rope. We were staying in a house there. She decided to go back to L.A. Prince happened to call me at the same time. I said, I'm going to stay in Minneapolis. I'm going to work on this with him, and then I'll meet you when you come back. And when I was there, he brought me upstairs to he had like a loft apartment at the time. I don't know if it's still there. I'm assuming it is. But it was in his office, and he sits behind a desk, and he puts this like 5-inch binder in front of me. And he just starts talking about the music business and that I needed to tell Janet that she needed to own her masters. And I'm just sitting there going, I have no idea what this means. You know, I'm in there in the recording studio, but I don't know the business side of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and of course, I'm getting lost in his beautiful green eyes, and I'm just saying, And here this man is feeding me information and feeding me stuff that people would die to know about. And I'm just sitting here in La La Land going, oh, you're so cute. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm in your office right now and I'm listening to this. What do you mean tell Janet she needs to own her masters? And he kind of just said, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is how the business works, blah, 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 blah. Tell her she should do this, have her call me, whatever. He was just so open about wanting other artists to not kind of get caught in the crap that he was in and the bad contracts. And again, I mean, of course I told her, but I didn't know what I was saying. And I don't really know where it went from there, but I do know that I felt after the fact, like, wow, that was kind of really cool that he cares so much about other artists that he would want to protect them in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Now I know,
because, you know, at that time everyone was just like, oh, he's weird. He's wearing Slave. What does that mean? And there was always a meaning. Prince never did anything just because,
right.
You know, like these days artists are just, they're just going for shock value. There's no meaning behind it. There's no intelligence or anything or any thought. And when he did things, they were very methodical. They were thought out and they were for a purpose. And usually it was a deeper purpose than anybody could ever imagine.
Wow. Yeah, no, he just seemed like a real thinker, like 100%.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, when you worked with Janet for so long, and obviously you guys were really, really good friends, did his name ever come up when you guys were creating? Because I know, like, Janet, you know, talked about in the early days, like, obviously, you know, Prince, I think, was an influence on her, of course. And, you know, and then obviously getting to work with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and them being a part of his whole situation. What did she ever say about Prince?
You know, it's funny because I was, like, the big, Prince. And, of course, she's going to say Michael, right? It was kind of like the Madonna Janet. It was the Prince Michael. At that time, a lot of people were either or. Okay. You didn't find a lot of people that were both. But she did appreciate him as an artist, of course, and thought, you know, he was phenomenal. But she wasn't going to cheerlead as much as I was. But I will say that his influence, the way it influenced me for a live show, really came about when we did, you'll have to help me remember because
yep,
I can't remember
I'm
now
here.
If it was the Janet tour
yep.
or the Velvet Rope tour where we did, when we did Nasty, it was the same version that we did, that she did on the Grammys.
Oh my
God. It was the live version.
Yes. Oh,
not the album version.
Okay. I feel that was the Janet show.
I think it was.
Yeah.
And so I remember her and I kind of having this, a discussion, and she's like, well, I don't know, because, you know, the fans really want to hear what's on the album. I said, Janet, I just came back from working with Prince. He doesn't do anything the same ever, and trust me, it can be better. It doesn't have to be the album version all the time. Prince never did the same thing twice, hardly ever, mm-hmm. and that was just who he was as an artist, and she really trusted me with that, and we did it, and the fans actually loved it, because of course they loved that. It wasn't a version they'd never heard. They just hadn't heard it then. You know, they didn't hear it live. And then I think that also played into the fact when we finally did the Together Again remix
mm-hmm.
on the AMAs, like that was a very bold move, especially for Janet, because she was very adamant that the fans wanted to hear what was on the album the way it was on the album.
Yeah.
That was her thinking. So I have to say, definitely the way, you know, Prince performed and changed up his stuff definitely bled into many other artists in the way that they did their performances. And I, you know, firsthand will say that I was one constantly pulling from what he did and tried to integrate it in anything that I did, especially with Janet.
Wow, that's awesome. As of the time that we're recording this interview, Madonna has already put out a tweet, you know, saying that she's obviously devastated that Prince passed away and all that. And at the moment, as we're recording, Janet has not done that yet. Do you think that she will? And what do you think she would want to say about Prince?
You know, I wish I could answer that, but I have no idea. I really, truly have no idea. And I really don't like to speak for her
mm-hmm. yep.
because, again, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I wanted to ask you about Madonna, because have you ever worked with Madonna? You and I have never really discussed that.
No, I don't think Madonna and I would get along.
Fair enough. If I do bring up though Madonna for a second, because like when I was on the air today, when we were talking about it on the station I work for, Virgin, it just sort of came up how, you know, Michael's gone. Now Prince is gone. Whitney's gone. And I was like, I wonder
right.
how, you know, Madonna's feeling, because, you know, that sort of was like, you know, her compadres, if you will, even if they weren't buddies or anything, but just that was such a huge part of the 80s. What do
right.
you think that the generation now, because I just feel like we're losing them all, and it's scary and it's sad. And do you think anyone else will ever come up that will exude the talent of the Whitneys, of the Michaels, of the Princes?
I hope so, for music's sake.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be very few and far between.
Okay.
I mean, look at, you know, as long as I've lived, there isn't another Michael. There just isn't. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of very good artists out there that are influenced by Michael, but they aren't Michael and they aren't close. And the same thing with Prince. I don't know that there's ever been a Prince prior to him, and I don't know that there'll ever be another one. I mean, he just exuded so much artistry that it's amazing that he could contain so much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really, truly, I feel that this is a very, very sad day for music in general. I mean, I saw an interview earlier where somebody said, you know, had Prince never been born, music would be in a different place right now.
Yeah.
It would be different. It would sound different. It could look different. And you can't say that for the hundreds of artists that are out there today, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And I do pray that one day there will be another Prince or another Michael or somebody of that caliber, but they're going to have to want it.
Right.
And apparently, you know, my feelings about some of the artists in this generation is that they just want it overnight. And these guys didn't get it overnight.
As someone who has worked with Prince, what do you want to leave, you know, my listeners with when they think of Prince? Like, what do you want to say to them to sort of wrap this up with regards to Prince and his legacy?
Oof, there's no pressure there.
You love my questions, T. I know it.
I want them, when they think of music in general, to see his face. Because that's what Prince exuded. That's what he was. He was a musical genius. Now, Prince was always talking about a message. He was always talking about social messages. Not always, you know, some of his music was very sexual. Mm-hmm. But I felt that he delivered everything with a purpose. And when he performed with all of himself. He never left anything. He left it all on the stage. All of it, 100%. Mm-hmm. Every single time, even in rehearsal, I would watch him in rehearsal, and he was 100% all the time. And I want people to know that about him, and that he cared. He cared about music. He cared about society, and he cared about people.
That's awesome. I'm so glad you said that, because again, I think a lot of people, again, because he's so quiet, and you don't often get glimpses of how he is as a person. So thank you for that, and thank you so much for doing this, T. Because I know it's a really tough day, and we appreciate this so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for letting me be a part of honoring him.
That is dancer and award-winning choreographer Tina Landon. Please make sure to follow her on her social media at I Am Tina Landon.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
Looking forward to chatting with our next guest. Colleen Renison is the lead singer of Vancouver-based blues and rock band No Sinner. The group is releasing their new album, Old Habits Die Hard, and have dropped their lead single, All Woman. Colleen, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We're very excited to have you on the show. And first of all, I'll tell you this. I'm totally in love with All Woman, the song. Love it. Can't wait to hear the rest of the album. And so I wanted to start off, before we talk about the album specifically, did you know that music was going to be in the cards for you since you were a kid?
I think I knew that before I even knew that music could be a hand that you were dealt. I learned how to walk and talk and sing all at the same time. It's just always been there.
Awesome. And I understand that you also have had like an acting career. So was that also sort of part of the plan, or did you sort of fall into that?
Well, I always wanted to perform. I mean, singing was definitely my first love, but you cannot really be in a rock and roll band when you're 5 years old. So the easiest way for me to perform was joining a youth theater program. And there was an agent that came to the performances, and she sort of scouted me, and then I just started working. I was a really rambunctious, wild child, and that was a great outlet for me. It really, really chilled me out. But it was kind of just a means to an end, like until I was able to pursue music.
And do you think that your acting skills and that mindset that you've had, because I know you've been in you know, some TV shows and also in some Hollywood movies with actors like Bruce Willis and Ray Liotta, that acting mindset, do you find that has helped you as a performer? Does it play into your like performances even to this day?
I think it can go hand in hand for sure. I didn't really realize how much one could augment the other. I went to theater school for a little while in New York when I was around 20, and they really talked about intention and story. And for me, music has always been about story. I don't play any instruments, so what I hold on to are the lyrics and what the song means. And if you're singing to someone, even if that someone isn't in the room, you know, that song means so much more. And it's the same when you're acting. I mean, you could be acting across from this person that you don't know, this stranger, but if you can pretend that they're your mother, your father, your lover, you know, your sister, your best friend, then that will engage you to a point where it's much more real and authentic and emotional. And that comes definitely with both acting and singing, for sure. And the storytelling of it is something that has always been really important to me.
Now, I wanted to ask you, because I want to get a little bit further into the writing and all that sort of stuff with regards to the album, but I wanted to ask you first, how did you and the band actually get together, and why did you settle on the name No Sinner?
Well, I met the guys, the first sort of round of guys. I met Parker Bosley through a friend at a Christmas party, and he's doing really great. His band, Gay 90s, is taking off. He just finished writing a song for Fits in the Tantrums. He was working with one of the Kings of Leon producers down in Nashville. Parker's an amazing talent. And luckily, we sort of found each other at a time when we were both in a bit of a lull. And we started writing these songs. And he was friends with Ian Brown, the drummer who played with the Mad Good Band, a bunch of other really great bands from Vancouver. And so he kind of came on board, and then I found Eric. I was at a place called Guilt & Co. doing a weekly night there, and he was one of the guitar players that came to play with me. He was actually 18 at the time and got banned from the bar, but I managed to find him through the phone book. He didn't have a cell phone, and he lived at his parents' house because he was 18. I mean, I figured he did. So I looked up all the Campbells, and so I finally got his house. And yeah, that was the first round. Those are the guys that wrote this next album. And, you know, we toured these songs. This album's been the meat and potatoes of our set for years now. We've been waiting to release it. And I'm so excited that it's finally coming out, because it feels like this is really the band that we flourished into. I mean, Boo Hoo Hoo was very much a starting point, and those are the first songs I'd ever written. And then on Old Habits Die Hard, you really hear the process of songwriting when it comes from a band, rather than having it be songs written on acoustic that are brought to a band.
Mm-hmm.
And just really talented, passionate guys. We've since separated, and they've gone on to their own projects. But we're a really great new lineup. Pretty excited about it. We're really excited about hitting the road soon. It'll be interesting to breathe some new life into these songs that we've been playing for, you know, a few years now. It's nice to get sort of a fresh take on them with an excited batch of new boys, new talented young men. I like to surround myself with them, you know.
How would you describe the sound of the band? Because, like, you know, I've been reading and doing my research, and I guess the pervasive thing that keeps coming back is blues rock. Is that how you would define yourselves?
I feel like that's it's an easy thing to say. It's kind of something, I feel like blues rock can sometimes have a bit of a stigma, and it's something that we've tried to avoid because it's so much more than that. I mean, on this new album, it's so much more multifaceted than blues rock, but I don't really know how to describe it. I mean, we always say rock and roll, because rock and roll is a great blanket statement for a whole bunch of subgenres inside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And blues rock, I feel like, is kind of limiting. I mean, there's pop, there's soul, there's funk, there's garage, there's punk, there's psych rock. Like, there's so much going on this next album. And blues and soul and rock are right at the center of it, but there's so many other branches jutting out from that trunk.
Okay.
It's a question that I would like to be able to answer much more concisively, so I'll work on that.
Okay. Joining us on the show is Colleen Renison, lead singer of the band No Sinner, based out of Vancouver. You can check them out on their website, nosinner.com. I wanted to ask you, is it challenging to be the lead singer of a band, and does it make a difference that you're the only female in the group?
It can be a blessing and a curse, for sure. I mean, you try and find an outlet to sit in your hair next to a mirror, any venue in the world, and it's really difficult. Which just goes to show how few women there really are on the touring rock and roll scene. I think there are more and more lately, which is cool. It's nice because you kind of get the little sister, big brother vibe going, mm-hmm. you know, when you're the only girl, it's kind of a bit of a pain for the same reasons. You get a little ganged up on, and people don't understand some of your plights. But overall, you know, the guys there have been great and pretty sensitive, and It helps if you have a lady tour manager.
Oh, yes.
To repeat you.
So I wanted to delve into the writing a little bit. I know that you mentioned off the top that, you know, you don't play an instrument, but I don't think that matters. I think it's really important that you can write. So when it comes to writing for you in the band, do you come with lyrics first? Do you have a melody? Like, how does it all come together for you guys?
There are a few different ways that they come about, which is good that we're not locked into a certain formula. I do, like, I've done lots of writing with Eric Campbell and lots of writing with Parker. And then a lot of the times the band, this is actually an interesting way to do it. I started out working with hip hop beats. So I would spend, like, when I was a teenager, you know, my friends would make their hip hop beats on, you know, whatever program they had on, like, a Triton or something. And then they would give them to me and I would sit alone with them and hours for hours and hours and write. So how it ended up working out really great and how a lot of the songs on the album came to be were the band would play, they would jam, and I wouldn't sing over top of it. And we would just record the whole jam. And then I would take those recordings, they're just iPhone recordings, and I would listen to them over and over again. And I would take certain parts of the jam and rearrange the songs and find melodies over them and then write the lyrics. And then bring back these newly structured, they would just be, you know, 6 minute long jams on like a riff and a groove. And then I would come and bring them back, you know, a skeleton of a song with a theme and a melody and everything. And then we would, you know, sort of streamline that and smooth it out together, which was a really, really interesting collaborative way to do things. Having the time to think about what I was going to say rather than just trying to write on the spot with everybody there, it allowed me to really reflect on it and work on the songs privately, but still get that vibe of having written with the band.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'll just think of melodies and lyrics and then bring them all, or just a little tiny piece of a song and either bring it to the band or bring it to one guy and then we would flesh it out. It's cool. I don't really have a process or a way to do things, and I think that's kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
To stay open-minded and not get too attached with your routine.
Now, with regards to All Woman, I think it's a great track. Was it a difficult decision to go with that as the like the lead track from the album?
Well, it's such an eclectic album. I mean, it was recorded over the course of, you know, 4 years. And there's so much, like I said, there's just so many branches coming out of the sort of blues rock and roll theme. It was hard to pick what song was going to be the best representation of the album and who we are and what our sound is now. And I felt like All Woman was an accessible choice. I really like the lyrics in it. I really, really, really love the pace line and just the whole groove of the song. It's super cool. And it's easy to listen to in any sort of, in lots of different scenarios. You know, it's not too in your face. It's not too sappy. It's not too this, too that. So I thought that it was a good introduction to where we're at now.
Now, with regards to the album, do you find that it is thematic, or are you sort of, not like all over the place, but just sort of, you know, doing a bunch of different things, or is there definitely a theme that people can pull from it?
Well, it's funny, the title, Old Habits Die Hard, is not a lyric in any of the songs, and it's not a title of any of the songs. But it's thematically kind of the heart of the album. Like I said, we recorded it over 4 years, you know, and we've done an entire lineup change now. The person that I was, you know, when we started making this album, and the person I am now today, that while we're releasing it, I've grown and changed a lot. And the album definitely reflects that. But the Old Habits Die Hard always comes back. It's like faced a lot of, you know, a lot of bumps in the road. And a lot of those bumps were caused by bad habits,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so the songs are basically, I mean, I guess, you know, you could call them the blues because most of the songs are not written about being happy, which is something that old habits can do to you. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a rock and roll odyssey. I think that's sort of the theme. The theme is that it's sort of all over the place. You know, it's a reflection of the last 4 years of what it's like to, you know, have your very first band and, you know, the process that it takes to get to your second record.
Very cool. Now, I wanted to ask you with regards to touring and stuff, like, can people across Canada expect to see you guys and maybe even other places in the States and overseas?
We are getting really excited to make some announcements about our tour that's going to be coming up in May. I know that we're going down to the States in July and planning on going over to Europe in the fall. There's lots of stuff going on. We're all up in the air right now. It's been hard to tack down dates, but we're going to be making some announcements soon, and we're definitely going to be in the U.S. and Canada and Europe before the end of the year.
Okay, perfect. So people can just check out the website, nocenter.com, for those tour dates once they're announced?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those things. There's so many avenues now. It's hard to keep track.
Awesome. And before I let you go, actually, speaking of social media, do you have one that speaks to your heart the most? Which one are you constantly on?
I'm having a lot of fun with Instagram. It's sort of more personal. Mm-hmm. But Facebook is where most of the information comes from. But if you want to get a little snapshot into our lives, Instagram is probably a good place to go.
Perfect. Colleen, you're awesome. Thank you so much for your time. And you're always welcome back on the show.
Thank you, Kelly. Right on. Have a great day.
That is, again, Colleen Renison, lead singer of the band No Sinner. Make sure to check them out on their website, nosinner.com.
Hi, this is Colleen Renison from No Sinner, and you are hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show.
The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
We truly appreciate your time on the show this week. Thank you so much for joining us. And a big thank you as well going out to our guests, Tina Landon and Colleen Renison of No Sinner. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from the legendary and one-of-a-kind entertainer, Prince. A strong spirit transcends rules. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media. You can do so on our website at kellyalexandershow.com. And of course, please make sure to check out our YouTube channel, which features our interviews, youtube.com/kellyalexandershow. Have an excellent week. You and I'll chat soon.